Okay, so yeah, quite a bit of the discussion recently through Bill's talk that sort of leads up to what I'll be covering. So it sort of links in quite nicely there. So the title of my talk is "How We Feel About Technology: The Views of Gunther, Anders, and Beyond." So I'll be discussing the often quite wild views of writer and activist Gunther Anders, who lived between 1902 and 1992. He was born while the technology to transmit pictures through wires was being developed, and he died the year after the World Wide Web was made public. So his life spanned many key technological discoveries. He was born in the city of Breslau, now part of Poland, and later studied in Germany. Here he got to know several important philosophers. His PhD tutor was Edmund Husserl. He later started with Martin Heidegger, both prominent existentialists, and he married political theorist Hannah Arendt. Gunther's surname was really Stern, Stern, but when he was working as a journalist in Berlin, an editor didn't want many Jewish-sounding names printed in his newspaper. So Gunther was asked to use another surname, and he took this literally, as the one he chose, Anders, means other in German. Anders and Arendt fled Nazi Germany in 1933, and while in France, they divorced amicably in 1937. Anders later moved to the United States and returned to Europe in 1950 to live and write in Vienna. Alongside his philosophical writings, he co-founded the anti-nuclear movement in Austria in 1954 and often wrote and campaigned against war. Anders could be called a philosophical anthropologist. His major work is acknowledged to be, and apologies in advance for my pronunciation, so his major work is De Antiquitate. Oh dear, start that again. De Antiquitate Dimension, which translates as the outdatedness of the human species, with the subtitle On the Soul in the Age of the Second Industrial Revolution. This was published in 1956, with a second volume following on in 1980. The book examines our relationship with technology and how this affects the way we think. As technology has progressed, it has given us more ways to alter the world around us, more ways to both create and destroy. But, he argues, there is a gap between what technology has enabled us to do and our ability to comprehend it. When Anders was writing the book, television and the nuclear bomb represented the latest in human achievements, and these are two of the main examples he cites. Since then, technological progress has given us computers, organ transplants, the internet, space travel, and artificial intelligence. So the gap which Anders discussed is now even wider. We can't imagine how big the internet is. Quantum physics raises more questions about the nature of reality than it answers, and we can't comprehend the destruction which nuclear weapons can cause. Compared with the wonders of modern science, our own individual capabilities look very humble. So Anders's theories still apply in 2020 and are arguably more relevant today than when he was writing. His arguments hinge on technology being superior to ourselves. One example of this is a calculator. For a long time, these have been able to accurately work out maths equations much quicker than we can. Anders cites how computers, even in the middle of the last century, were seen as superior for more complex processes than sums. He refers to early strategy computers used by the military, and when a decision which risked starting a Third World War was taken out of a General MacArthur's hands and given to an, quote, electric brain, end quote. Its conclusion, another quote, by chance was more humane than the decisive strike the human MacArthur had proposed. End quote. Today, of course, computers have far more cognitive power, especially when linked up with each other. So Anders would say that they're even more superior now. Another way in which we're inferior to technology is that we aren't as durable. Even if we live longer than, for instance, a light bulb lasts, this doesn't matter because a blown light bulb can just be swapped over for a new one. Anders says that he once talked to a terminally ill man who felt inadequate because he couldn't be replaced, like a light bulb can be. Anders says that when we feel inferior to technology, we do so because, in comparison, we, quote, are a poor quality raw material when it comes to being moulded into this or that machine part, end quote. One way we respond to this is by testing our own limits and aiming for the standards set by machines. In practice, this becomes what he called human engineering. His examples aren't always clearly worded, but he says, quote, if a machine requires a body capable of operating in icy conditions, then one exposes one's body to the freezing cold in an icing up installation, which is specifically built so that one can train in these icy conditions and transform oneself into a being that is their match, end quote. He says that this human engineering is despicable because, quote, we are undergoing the transformation of the self for the sake of machines and because we employ these as blueprints and models for our own modification. We hence relinquish ourselves as our measure as humans, and with this gesture, we either restrict or give up our freedom, end quote. And improved technology would accelerate this trend of us being closer to machines, whether through spacesuits enabling us to survive in a vacuum or through more direct ways such as implanted chips connecting us to digital technology. Anders talks about hybrid beings, but he doesn't go into detail in the sections of the book I've read about what these hybrid beings might look like. It's tempting to think of the Cybermen from Doctor Who. The original concept of a Cyberman, drawn up in the mid-1960s, was a person who had replaced their internal organs with more efficient and powerful mechanical substitutes, and in so doing loses their humanity. And this leads us to the title of the book, The Outdatedness of the Human Species. Anders argues that we're so inferior to the technology we have created that we have now become obsolete. Not all of Anders's book has been translated into English, and I'll mostly be referring to a section which has, titled On Promethean Shame. This was translated with an accompanying essay in the 2016 book called Prometheanism, Technology, Digital Culture and Human Obsolescence, written by Christopher John Muller, who happens to be a cousin of mine. It focuses on Anders's description of one way in which we recognise our obsolescence, and that is Promethean shame. So what is Promethean shame? Taking the first word first, Prometheus is generally agreed to mean forethought. Prometheus is also a character in Greek mythology who stole fire from the gods to give to humanity. Having fire meant that humanity could develop civilization, including technology. And a meaning behind this is that humanity has tricked nature, or the gods, by the progress we have made. By giving humanity fire, Prometheus angered the gods and was punished with eternal torment, which involved him being chained to a rock and having his liver pecked out by an eagle. This part of the myth represents the unpleasant side effects of progress, such as damage to the environment and the misery caused by weapons technology. So by invoking Prometheus, Anders is referring to how technology goes against nature and has painful consequences. One of these is shame. But his argument isn't that we're ashamed of the consequences of technology. This would have been a more obvious view for Anders to have, especially as he was active in the anti-war movement when nuclear weapons, even more destructive than those used against Japan, were being developed. Promethean shame is different to this. And to illustrate this, Anders quotes from a diary entry of his from 1942. He was writing about when he and a friend visited an exhibition of technology in California, and he found himself more interested in his friend's reactions to the appliances on show than the appliances themselves. He said that his friend, quote, concealed his hands behind his back as if he were ashamed to have brought these heavy, graceless and obsolete instruments into the company of machines working with such accuracy and refinement. End quote. Later in the essay, he returns to a comparison between our hands and the technology around us. Another quote. Anyone who has never looked down at their hands in an alienated and bemused manner at these clumsy instruments here, because their obsolescence and incorrigible incompetence have caused the fall from grace. This person does not know the shame that is the shame of today, the shame that erupts daily a thousand times over. End quote. So the particular kind of shame he says we feel, Promethean shame, is, quote, the shame when confronted by the humiliatingly high quality of fabricated things, end quote. The important word here is humiliatingly. We feel humiliated, not just because machines are so sophisticated, but also because we ourselves aren't fabricated or manufactured, but born. So the shame we feel is towards ourselves because we're only human. So do we really feel ashamed that we're not superior machines, even subconsciously? A problem for Anders here is that we're not comparing like for like. Even if we compare our capabilities to those of machines and find some aspects of ourselves lacking, such as how we can't do sums as well as a calculator, we have other qualities which machines can't have. Emotions, self-awareness, creativity, a sense of community. These qualities separate us from machines, meaning it's not a fair comparison. Or if we do think that we can compare ourselves to machines, such qualities could mark us out as superior if we want to judge things this way. Anders himself considers some other objections to his argument. The first is that we feel pride at humanity's technological achievements rather than shame. He replies that we can't feel pride at something if we haven't contributed to it. So we can't feel pride at a smartphone if we played no part in its design or manufacture. He says, quote, an observer who erupts with the explanation, my goodness, aren't we great guys to be capable of this, when encountering a computer, is a clown, a figment of imagination. His response here, like elsewhere, is rather narrow-minded and dismissive. Technological advances are social products, which gives us a connection to them, which, even if tenuous, we could plausibly feel proud about. Another objection Anders considers is that we are freer and more adaptable than machines are, and therefore we've got no reason to feel inferior to them. A car or even a computer has got a more limited set of functions than a person. But he says that this objection doesn't stand up because technology is a process, not an object. And as a process, it is adaptable and always changing. He says that we aren't as adaptable. Our bodies are no different to those of our ancestors. Anders says that the strongest objection to his theory of Promethean shame is that shame can only be felt in front of a superior power which observes us. A machine can't observe us, as it's not a living, feeling being, and therefore we can't really feel judged by it, and therefore ashamed at it. This is the view of existentialist philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre, who said that because it only makes sense to feel shame in relation to another person rather than an inanimate object, this is a way of proving other minds exist. Because we can relate to other people and judge ourselves against them. And, we could feel shame if we don't meet the standards that other people have set. So a budding runner might feel ashamed that they can't run as fast as Mo Farah. Or equally, they might feel inspired or jealous or even proud. We don't feel ashamed that we can't run as fast as a car. And this is because we don't relate to a car in the same way as we do other people. Anders' response to this objection is to say that we behave as if machines can observe us. Although they can't do this and are therefore blind, quote, we are far too blind to the blindness of things, end of quote, to notice this and have it impact on our behaviour. In other words, we act like technology can judge us because we don't notice that it can't. Again, his response is a bit dismissive and generalised and therefore not convincing. In his discussion of Promethean shame, Anders skirts around references to Karl Marx, but doesn't address his ideas directly. For example, when discussing human engineering, that's the aim to adapt ourselves to be more like machines, he says, quote, "Following a familiar pattern, its maxim could be described thus. It is not enough to interpret the body in various ways. One must also change it," end quote. And of course, this is a corruption of Marx's philosophers have hitherto only interpreted the world in various ways. The point is to change it, from his theses on Feuerbach. At times, it's like Anders is dropping in clues that his views relate to Marxism, and there are a few others that I'll mention later. The aspect of Marxism which is most relevant is alienation, covered in texts like the 1844 Economic and Philosophical Manuscripts, which weren't well known when Anders was writing in the 1950s. One aspect of alienation is that we're alienated from the products of our labour, which includes technology. For Marx, we're distanced from these products because we don't own them, at least until we buy them. And more fundamentally, we don't own the means of production which create these commodities. Anders isn't interested in the economic aspects of alienation, but more so in its psychological implications. Remember that he talked about a widening gulf between the capabilities of technology and our own. This gap and our reaction to it is one way that we are psychologically estranged from technology. So here, at least, it looks like there's some common ground between Anders's views and Marx's theories of alienation. But it's not as straightforward as that. Another aspect of alienation is reification, which broadly means turning into an object, although, of course, you know, you can go into it in much more detail than that. Reification is one way that we're alienated from ourselves by living in capitalist society. An example of how this relates to Anders's thought is when he mentions photography. He says that we try to be reified through photography, as photos turn us into objects, or reproduced products, as he puts it. And the people who we see most images of, celebrities, become role models partly because they are more reproduced in this way. He says that making photographic copies of ourselves, and, you know, obviously in a more modern context, you know, plastering them all over social media, is an attempt to escape our uniqueness, which is, for him, one of the ways that we're inferior to mass-produced machines. And reification is also relevant when Anders discovers when Anders discusses human engineering or becoming more machine-like. But following his argument, there are limits to how reified we can become, though. He writes, quote, "The type of human being that Charlie Chaplin portrayed in Modern Times, the film, who compulsively enact involuntary, machine-like movements and continues to do so even when he is no longer operating a machine, does not exist. There is no human being who realises, with feelings of alienation and horror, that he has already become part of a machine. No, such Chaplin-esque humans do not exist. The portrayal is distorted. It is the other way round. Modern man is disconcerted, rather, because a resilient residue of self still remains even when he actually ought to be nothing and actually wants to be nothing other than a cog in a machine." And elsewhere, he also refers to people being an appendix to the machine. And this reminds us of Marx's famous phrase that factories convert workers into a living appendage of the machine. And that's from Capital, Volume 1, Chapter 15, Section 9. Anders, writing around 90 years later and after 90 years of technological development, says that we've become conditioned to want this, to want to become a cog in the machine and regret that we can't achieve it. So Promethean shame isn't shame at being reified. It's shame at not being reified. Anders said that Promethean shame is, quote, a new second level in the history of the reification of human beings. End quote. Or he considers that if this second level has already been reached, then a new third level has emerged, the internalization of our attitude to being reified. This means that our shame at not being a machine has become second nature, rather than feeling like it's a judgment from someone or something else. Someone, quote, despises himself in the same way that things would despise him if they could, end quote. Believing that we're inferior to technology and that we can't be a machine is reminiscent of the Marxist notion of fetishism. This is when we attribute powers which we believe are beyond our control to something created by humans, i.e. technology. The difference between Marxism and Anders's views comes in how we view the object being fetishized. In the Marxist sense, it is the object as a commodity which is being fetishized, whereas for Anders, the emphasis is on the object as a manufactured item. In other words, in the Marxist sense, when we fetishize something, its monetary value becomes more important than how useful it is. While for Anders, the technology represented by the object becomes more important than our own usefulness. So although Anders's views can be seen as an offshoot from Marx's views on alienation and fetishism, they end up becoming incompatible. Anders would take the differences between his stance and that of Marx and the Marxists as proof that his theory has superseded Marxism. He says, quote, "For a century, the most extreme image of dehumanization, degradation, and deprivation of liberty conceivable was that workers are being exploited by their working conditions. In the light of what has now actually happened, this image has become the epitome of naivety and harmlessness," end quote. But as we discussed earlier, there are several flaws with Anders's reasoning, which mean that we don't need to worry about him making Marx irrelevant. Even if Anders goes too far here, he's right to emphasise how dominant technology is in our lives. Whether or not we feel ashamed because of this, something we do feel towards technology is dependence. We're certainly now more reliant on technology than in either Marx or Anders' times, especially, of course, electricity, the internal combustion engine, central heating, medical advances and the internet. Anyone with a smartphone or a computer has instant access to a near infinite amount of data, information or trivia online. So we no longer need to argue in a pub about which song kept Vienna by Ultravox off the number one spot. We can just look it up on Wikipedia. This easy access to information has some unsettling consequences. We don't need to memorize as much these days because we've outsourced our memory to our smartphones. The so-called Google effect is how we don't bother to remember something because we know we can just Google it later on, and we consider this more reliable for many things than our own hazy recollections. This was also named digital amnesia in a report by cybersecurity firm Kaspersky Lab in 2015. Researchers found that 44%, so almost half of Americans aged 16 to 55, said their smartphones serve as their memories, while 91% said they consider their smartphones and the internet to be an extension of their brains. If we rely on a computer as an extension of our brain, we don't need to rely on ourselves quite so much. This could mean in practice that we relegate our own ability to navigate places by relying on a sat-nav to tell us where to go, or even that we don't concentrate on a film as much because we can just rewind it and watch it again, for instance. Our reliance on digital technology is often only recognised with a jolt when we have to do without. Some people get very irritated by not having their smartphone with them, so they're not able to catch up on emails, social media posts and breaking news. This has been labelled the fear of missing out, and nomophobia is the term for fear of not having a smartphone. Now, Anders would say that these examples are more proof that not only have we become more inferior to our technology, but also that it has made us obsolete. Anders often uses hyperbole, such as by saying that humans are facing obsolescence. And of course, this is up front in the title of his book. But however much we feel we rely on technology, of course, and more fundamentally, it also technology relies on us to design, make and use it. And so it's difficult to see humanity becoming obsolete, even though technology is changing us. So to sum up, Gunther Anders raises important questions about our relationship with technology. How is technology superior to us? How does technology shape how we think? How do we feel about this? But whether or not we look at his arguments about Promethean shame in a Marxist framework, they don't always convince us as a general diagnosis of our attitude around technology. Feeling ashamed at not being a machine could be some rare psychological condition, perhaps, rather than being something many of us would relate to. There are already enough ways that capitalist society alienates us without adding Promethean shame. Thank you.